Well, good evening, everybody. My name is Doreen. I'm a very grateful recovering addict. And it's really good to be here, even though I tried like hell to get out of it. And when they called me, I had to go to California, you know. I said, well, I don't think I'll be able to make that because I got to go to California tomorrow, you know, the second or the third, something like that. And he said, well, when do you think you can make it? I said, I don't know. I think it's... He said, what about the 19th? I said, oh, shit. So, but they say, wouldn't this would you go, you know, for your recovery? And I know when I was out there doing the things that I was doing, I would go to any length to get the drugs and things that I needed to obtain to keep me functioning out there in the street doing all the negative things that I was doing. Now, if I may be jumping from here to there, because I am kind of tired. It's been a long day for me. I've been up ever since about 5 o'clock this morning, you know, and I went in and put some cold water on my face. But I'm okay. And like I always say, it's going to be all right, you know. I started using drugs at a very, very early age. And I left home at a very early age. And if I had to be jumping from here to there, that's the way I just get started, you know. And so many people come up afterwards and ask me, well, what happened to your son? Well, what happened with you and your husband? Well, what happened with you and your sister? I don't know. I'll be just talking, you know, once I get started, you know. But everything turned out all right. That's all I can tell you. I stopped using drugs back in hard drugs now, back in June of 68. And I cannot stand up here and tell you that it was no doing of mine. I didn't make up my mind and say that this was it. I'm going to stop using drugs and, you know, get my life together. It didn't happen for me like that. What happened is that I got locked up for the last and final time I know today. After being incarcerated so many times in and out of jail for soliciting prostitution, name it, I've been through it all. And when I come out, I was scared to death. And if there's any newcomers in this room tonight, I know, no doubt, maybe they can relate to that. Coming into this fellowship, you know, wondering if there was any hope for you, wondering if you can get your life together, you know, wondering would you ever be ready for society or could you ever do any of the other things that you've seen people doing. And I always like to look at this now as like it was a gift from God, you know, it was just my time. And when I went over to that jail for that last and final time, what happened is that I knew that I was sick and tired of doing the things that I was doing, you know. And I did want a new way of life, but I didn't know how to get started. Here I am, unskilled, uneducated, not knowing which way to start or which way to go with my life. And I sit over at that jail, and I began to start thinking, you know, what was going to happen to me. And what had happened was when they took me to jail, I got laid over for 8 days, and I got very sick. By that time, I should have been kicked my habit. But I got real sick, and they had to take me from the jail, from Women's Detention Center, over to D.C. General Hospital, which is a hospital in D.C., and there they found out that I had a heart murmur. And on top of finding out that I had a heart murmur, they found out that I had a venereal disease, which was in the first stage of syphilis. And if I stand up here tonight and if I tell you that I knew what was wrong with me and I was about to go somewhere and see about myself, I'd be telling you a damn lie. Because I didn't know what was wrong with me and I wasn't about to go anywhere to see about myself. So you see, I know it's only through the grace that I'm standing up here at this Napoleon tonight. Especially with things that's happening and going on today and the type of life that I was leading. Still, I made probation behind that charge and I came out. And I still didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know which way to begin or start my life. I had long since separated myself from my family. I had a kid out of wedlock at the age, I got pregnant at the age of 15. And at the age of 16, after he was born, I left home because I thought I was a woman. It was nobody, nothing nobody could tell me because I had a child. So I struck out to go out on my own. And when I left home, I had no idea of the things that I was going to run into. And the same way when I come out of jail, I didn't know how I was going to begin to get my life together. Like I said, unskilled, uneducated, not knowing which way to turn, you know. I didn't even know how to stand up and hold a decent conversation with anybody. Because all the people I knew were people of the life that was out there. And the type of language we spoke was, hey, motherfucker, how you doing, bitch? And that was just like everyday language. That's how we talk. Hey, bitch, you know so-and-so. Say, yeah, motherfucker, I remember so-and-so. Say, oh, kiss my ass, so-and-so and so-and-so. You know. Well, that was holding a general conversation, you know. So here again, I was very fortunate. They had opened that woman's halfway house in Washington, D.C. And it was the first woman's halfway house that they had opened up in Washington, D.C. And I was one of the first residents in that house. I've never been to any kind of treatment for drugs, no more than getting locked up, coming out, and staying clean for about a month or 2 months. I think I stayed clean as long as about 6 months. You know, and as the story goes, you could always stop, but you never knew how to stay stopped. And when I went to that house, I was scared to death because I didn't know what to do. I hurt. I really hurt, you know. And when I say that I hurt and I really hurt, I mean I hurt with them emotional feelings, which I did not know anything about at that time. I was just all knotted up and tied up on the inside, and I could not talk about anything. I did not know how to talk about Doreen. But anything or anybody else, I could talk about, and I could help you talk about. But when it comes to talking about me, I don't want nobody in my business. I could not tell you the pain of what I was going through with. And now that I look back on my life, I see that I was a very sick girl, even before I started using drugs, even before I even got in my teens. Because at the age of 8 years old, I was accused of being raped. And at that time, I did not get raped. But the humility that I had to go through with at the age of 8 years old, I know today it left a real deep scar on me. What happened was the police came. They took me to the hospital to examine me and everything, and they found out I had not been touched. And they picked the man up and took him through a lot of changes. And they finally let him go when they found out I had not been touched. But after that is when the scars really came. People would point at me and say, there go that little girl that so-and-so raped. People would point at me and tell their kids, I don't want you playing with such and such a person. You stay away from her, you know. Or when I went out to play, little boys was pulling at me, making dirty gestures, and I found myself fighting all the time. So I began to withdraw at a very early age. When things begin to happen with me, I never just say anything about it. I would just keep it in. And at that age, I began to develop an attitude of, I just didn't give a damn. I just didn't care. At the age of 12 years old, I did get raped. And it was a very brutal rape. I come home with my clothes all distorted, torn, and messed up. And my mom then wanted to know what happened. And I could not tell them. They thought I had been in a fight somewhere. So I got punished for that. But I never did talk about that rape. And I know today why I didn't talk about that rape. It's because what I went through with when I was 8 years old, I imagine I just didn't want to go through that anymore. I started growing up, and like I said, I got pregnant. I left home right after my kid was born. I started prostituting, I started stealing, lying, naming. I've done a little bit of everything under the sun. If there's some things that you can think of, you may say, I wonder if she done that. You haven't done that, too. I stayed out there for over 18 some odd years, out in that street, wandering from pillar to post, just blocking out anything, not caring what I did, who I was with, what I did when I was with them, or anything. And like I said, I had long since separated from myself from my family because they did not understand me. Hell, I didn't even understand myself, so how could I expect anybody else to understand me? So here I was out in that jungle all alone, but thinking I was slick or smart and knew everything. It got so bad for me out there, I got down to be as low as any woman could get. I couldn't even stand on the corners and be a good, decent prostitute anymore. That's just how bad I began to look. Taking anything from anybody, as long as it was something. It's a good thing I was a thief, because if I wasn't, I wouldn't have gotten anything while I was out there. So you see, when I come out of jail and I went into this halfway house, I was clean. My head was clear. But I was scared. I was frightened to death. Because all them little monsters started popping up. And I wanted to shove them back down. I got in that house, and by me being the first woman resident in that house, they had things to do in the house like putting up curtains and getting the house set up for other girls to come in. And I think I just buried myself in that house, making curtains, washing woodwork, and washing the walls and helping to get the room set up, you know, so I wouldn't have to go out. And when I did go out, I would go out with the counselors. And the counselors were so glad to have me there, for experience, because they didn't know what the hell they was doing either. Then I got real close to them. I wouldn't walk a half a block without somebody being with me. That's just how frightened I was. After I was in that house for about 3 months, other women began to come in their house. And there were other women who like were my peers. Women I had hustled with, women I had exchanged money with, clothes with, women I had even laid up with. Yes, I've been through the whole bit. And as these women begin to come in the house, things had begun to happen to me while I was in that house. Like I took a lot of pride in some of the things I had done in that house. So when women begin to come in the house and they begin to sit down and they take a smoke off a cigarette and the ashtray, you see, instead of putting the ash in there, going over, put the ash in the ashtray, they would do it from here. And the ash would fall on the floor. And I would say, look, girl, what is wrong with you? Don't you see that damn ashtray over there? And they would say things to me like, bitch, you must be crazy. This ain't your house. See, this is the government's damn house. But I have to get this ass together. So get up there and bring the ashtray over there or move closer to the ashtray. And they couldn't understand why I was speaking out so about something that didn't even belong to me. And one night the counselors come to me. The head counselor, the director of the house, came to me and said, Doreen, say, you know, we don't have anybody to cover the midnight staff shift. Say, do you think that you can handle that midnight staff shift for us until 8 o'clock in the morning? We had about 10 women in the house. And immediately I said, oh, sure, I can handle that shift. Right away. They said, well, okay. So they left out there and left me with the keys and everything to the house. And I went in the office and sit in the office, put my feet up on the desk and talked on the damn telephone like I knew what time of day it was and what was going on and what was happening. And then here come the girls all in the office. We sit down lying about our men, who I bought a Cadillac for and how much money I had. I ain't had shit. Oh, we was telling all them lies and everything. And somebody else says, "Dang, I sure would like to have a cup of coffee." Somebody else says, "I would too." And they said, "Doreen, let's go downstairs and get some coffee." I said, "Well, you know, we ain't got no business down in that kitchen." I said, "Because after hours, we're not supposed to be down there." They said, "Oh, we ain't gonna mess up nothing. We're just gonna get the coffee and come on out." And I called this way in two hats, wanting to be all right, knowing that we had no business down in that kitchen. But I took them down in the kitchen and I let them get the coffee. And they got the kitchen, the coffee, and one of the girls said, "Dad, what we have for dinner tonight?" And I never forget, we had pork chops, mashed potatoes, and spinach for dinner that night, salad. The girl say, "Shh, I'm hungry. I'm gonna give me one of these pork chops out here." Then I say, "Wait a minute, we said that we just gonna get some coffee and then we're gonna leave out here. You understand me?" She said, "We ain't testing that food." And the girl said, "Shit, I'm gonna give me one of these pork chops. I don't even think about that shit you talking." And before I knew it, my whole thing had changed. I said, "All right, everybody out to the goddamn kitchen. Ain't nobody getting a goddamn thing." And I barricaded the Frigidaire like it was my life. If they touch that Frigidaire, I'm going to kill somebody. So, of course, the girls went on and they said, "Now, see there, you stopped us from getting the coffee. Darn, we just going to get the coffee and the girls are not going to touch folks." I said, "Well, get the goddamn coffee and let's get out the kitchen." And I just stood there just rocking like I was going to kill somebody. So sure enough, they got the coffee and they got out the kitchen. And I looked around, see everything was in shape like nobody had been down here. So when I come out of the kitchen, lock the door and say, "Whew." But for the first time in my life, I felt loneliness. When them girls got upstairs, they talked about me like a dog. They said they didn't get that bitch a pair of keys and she done lost her mind. That bitch ain't nothing but a police bitch, so-and-so. And right then and there, I needed somebody to talk to. I needed somebody to understand me. I needed somebody to be with me. But there was nobody to be with me. And now I know today that that was the God of my understanding working in my life. He had me out there on the desert. And he said, "My child, you are alone out here on this desert." And I felt the pain of humility. And I began to get back. And I couldn't sleep none that night. Next morning when the director come in, she wanted to know what happened. And I explained to her what had happened. No, I told her nothing had happened. And I walked out in the hall and the girls come down the steps and somebody said, "There go that old bitch there now." And I run back in the office and I told her what had happened. She said, "Did you learn anything out of that?" I said, "Yes, I did. I shouldn't have opened that door for him." She says, "Okay, good." She come back to me again that night and asked me, "Would I watch that shift again that night?" I said, "Oh, shit." I did not want to go through that. But go through that, I must. So that night, I watched the house. And the girls come back that same next night and did the same thing. We sat up and we talked and we laughed. They had forgotten all about the night before. They had forgotten about how they had talked to me and how they had treated me. Like nothing had ever happened. And I sit there. It seemed like my God had me wide open to say, "Look at this story. Get a good feel of this story." And I sit there with him and I laughed and I talked and I lied and jived around with him. And that magical word come up again. "Let's get some coffee tonight." I said, "You know what, y'all? I said, if I was y'all, I would get a petition, and I would write a petition out, and everybody sign it. And when Miss Carson come in here in the morning, I would give her that petition, because y'all should have a coffee pot up here and some snacks up here for y'all a certain time of night. Because I'm not opening that goddamn kitchen tonight. And man, this is when the shit did start. If I was something the night before that, you can imagine where I was that night. And here again, I say, the God of my understanding just grabbed me up and held me. And I began to listen to what they were saying. Who does she think she is? She thinks she's so cute. Or she thinks she's so perfect. She act like this her goddamn house, so and so and so and so. But what I was hearing them say, Doreen is changing. Doreen is changing. She ain't going for that bullshit no more. That was my first lesson in dealing in humility and beginning to speak out for myself. Because for the first time in my life, somebody trusted me. For the first time in my life, somebody gave me some responsibility, and I told them that I could handle it, and damn if I wasn't going to handle it. And that's what I did. Now, mind y'all, y'all haven't heard me say anything about NA yet. Because for 8 years, I stayed out there before I found fellowship. And I always like to say that I staggered with God's loving arms around me for 8 years until it was time for me to find this fellowship. And what happened? And like it says in our who, what, and how about alcohol, it's one of the oldest known drugs. I stopped using drugs, but I started drinking because it was accepted by society. And a lot of us go from one extreme to the other extreme. By the way, I wound up getting a job in that halfway house. The first job I'd ever had of being a counselor in that halfway house. And I started hanging out with people who socialized and drank on the weekend. That was okay. But there still was an empty void that was down inside of me that was not being filled. I still did not feel right. I got a promotion from the halfway house to work down at the central office. And there I had to take on a caseload of drug addicts. Practicing drug addicts. Them practicing their hard drugs and I'm practicing my alcohol. That was a hell of a combination. Me trying to tell them what they're doing to their lives, and they're telling me that I ain't nothing but an alcoholic. But what was happening, you all, I was scared. I was scared to death. I needed something to hold on to. I needed something to hold on to. Now, mind you, I haven't begun to really dig deep and deal inside here. Everything was sort of surface-like. I begin to look good on the outside and, you know, look like I'm handling my stuff. I'm not hanging out with the wrong crowd and all this jibber-jabber and stuff, you know. But I was a very lonely, lonely individual. All I could do was go to work and come home from work in my apartment with me and my body. Until it got to the point where I was beginning to have blackouts and things. Not remembering what I did the night before and things like that. And the last bout with that was when I woke up in the bed with my bootlegger. Here's a man standing over top of me wanting to know, Bert, what you want for breakfast? I said, man, what the hell is you doing in my house this time of morning? He said, I'm in your house. You ain't in my house. I'm in your house. You in my house. I said, oh, shit. I thought I was home, and I know it was almost time for my husband to get home. I went home that morning and happened to beat my husband home. But I got on my knees and I prayed like I never prayed before. I asked God to please help me, because it seemed like I'm getting ready to go right back down that path I come back from. I was getting ready to go right back. I tried to go to church, but church couldn't fill that void. Nothing could really fill that void. What was I going to do? And I thank God, the fellow who's my sponsor today. I started out, and I thank God for that other fellowship who introduced me to the other fellowship. And I began to start going to meetings. And it were meetings like we have. People were sharing their experiences, their strength, and their hopes. The first time I ever heard anybody talk, it was this man at the podium. He was talking, and he was sharing. And this guy looked like a professor. And some of the things that he was saying about himself, I could not believe it. As sharp and as good as this guy was looking, standing up at the podium. And it sort of caught my ear. Because I'm so used to being around people who talk about people, and I'll help you to talk about people, but don't say a goddamn thing about me. And I had to go back to another meeting to find out if this was really true. And I stayed in that meeting, the meeting, for 2 years. Nobody told me that I could not talk. I talk about every damn thing in there. The women used to shiver when they hear me talk. Because I would let it all fall out. And my sponsor happened to be a drug addict who turned into an alcoholic. And he told me not to talk about drugs in these meetings. And when they call on me, I say, I can't talk about one without talking about the other, because our drug is a drug is a drug is a drug is a drug. And when I began to find out how forceful I was in speaking, I began to talk out and couldn't nobody keep me quiet. And they started. We started, said we should have something like this for the drug addicts. And they told me they had started a drug meeting in Washington, D.C., up at the VA. And I went into the VA hospital to that meeting at 5 tonight. And it was so dark in there. And they had a lamp on the table. And you had to look like this when you went in. I said, well, what kind of meeting is this? They said, this is the drug meeting. This is the drug meeting. I mean, like, you know? I said, well, goddamn, you can't see nothing. I mean, for once I begin to step out of the light. You know what I mean? My life is overbooked now. I'm beginning to feel kind of good about myself now. That voice that I said I had there was beginning to sort of close up a little. You know, I begin to feel that voice up because I begin to start talking about Doreen, you know, and talking about the pains of things, talking about how I was going through them emotional changes, talking about how I was hating. I begin to start screaming out to people. And they're all, get me in here and tell me to keep quiet. Oh, no! But I thank God for that meeting today. Because I sit there and I begin to hear them drug addicts talking about the pain of growing. How they felt about talking about themselves. And they're talking about this and they're talking about that. And they sound all right, but I just didn't like being in all that dark. Oh, no. And that's when I found that little white book, Narcotic Anonymous. And I began to read that book after I left that meeting, and I liked everything I read in that book. And I called out California, and I talked to Jimmy Kay. And Jimmy Kay said, well, baby, we're going to send you some starter kits down here so y'all can get to working in D.C. I said, thank you. And the first meeting we opened up was down in the federal courts of D.C., outside meeting, outside that hospital. I opened a meeting up down there in the federal court, me and about five or six other people. And we've been rolling ever since. And that's been over 10 years ago. And we don't have no more meetings in the dark. Because as we say, it's a lie when you say an addict don't recover anymore. Because it's living proof in this room here. And I'm here to tell you tonight, there is no growth without pain. And the only way out of this thing is you got to go through it. I come in here and I had to go through a lot of changes. I mean some growing changes. I come in here, I had to get rid of my husband. Yeah, he was practicing. And him and I wasn't about the same thing. And as much as I loved him, I had to turn him loose. Because y'all told me that I couldn't save nobody but myself. And I left my husband. And I had to go on working on Doreen. I had to deal with the loneliness and the pain of loneliness. I had to find out that I might be lonely, but I was not alone. God of my understanding was always there with me at all times. There was times I had an apartment. I did not want to be in it by myself, but I have never been anywhere by myself. So Doreen, it's time to get to know Doreen. So who have I got in here with me? I got the God of my understanding. And then I got another one they call Snowfoot. And don't you know I had to battle? I had a battle on my hand with Snowfoot. But as my hope increased, my faith increased, and Snowfoot began to decrease, I began to go home and make myself stay in that apartment. I had nowhere else to go after my meetings. I began to get involved in this program here, like y'all, H and I, the schools. Anywhere I could go, I was trying to carry the message anywhere I go. At night, I used to hate to go home because I hate to go home alone. But then I would go home and I begin to read my literature. I begin to read the basic text. And I also have some spiritual literature that I read too. That's something to keep my spirits up. And I would sit there and I'd moan and I'd groan through the pain. I'd sit there and I'd rock and I'd talk. Sometimes I would get a chair and put it in the middle of the floor and get another chair and sit in between that chair, facing that chair. And I'd sit down and I'd have a talk with my God. And I would tell him how much I was hurting, how I felt, what I felt like doing. There was time when Snowfoot would tell me to get up and go to the door and go in on out. And I would get up and go to the door and I said, not tonight, Snowfoot, maybe tomorrow, but not tonight. We will not get a piece of this tonight. I remember the times I couldn't sleep. I would twist and turn in my bed, and I'd jump straight up in the bed and cut on the lights. And me and Stewfoot would sit there on the side of my bed and have a little talk. I'll defy your ass tonight, Stewfoot. I dare you to come in here messing with me if you want to. Now, I'm tired, and I got to get some sleep, because I got to go to work tomorrow morning, and you get your ass out of here and get up, open my door, and slam it, and get back in bed and sleep like hell. And if you don't think it works, I dare you to try. And you know how you get that thinking sometime? Sometime I'll be riding along in my car. I'll be thinking about my husband. Here I done left a man got another woman, living with another woman. I wanted to go up there and break windows and kick in doors and everything else. And Stewfoot would say, why don't you ride by there? Just go and then take a peek. And I would stop my car and pull it to the curb and say, look, Stewfoot, get out, because I don't want your ass riding with me today. Do you understand that? And open all four doors on my car, up the hatch, and say, get your ass out of here. And slam the door and get back in my car and keep riding. I'm going to tell you, it works. I get in my bathroom sometimes and get down on my knees. I said, Lord, I don't feel too good. I'd look in the mirror at myself. I said, Lord, I don't feel too good. I don't like this lady today. So get down on your knees. I'd get down on my knees in front of the commode. And I start talking. And then I start flushing. I'd flush all that shit down there. Tell me what can't happen if you really try. And of course there's going to be some pain, because you've got to unlearn and start relearning all over again, and that ain't easy. Here I am, a woman in the prime of my life. Of course I want a man. And I got nerve enough to tell one, out of my way. I had a hell of a lot of nerve, didn't I? 40-some years old. But that's what I had to do. That's just what I had to do. I loved it. I had to turn it loose. And I had to begin to start working and get to know this woman here. My husband and I, we were separated for 5 years. My husband will celebrate his 7th anniversary next week. So you can't tell me what can't happen if you only believe and if you trust in your higher power and have the faith to go on in spite of all the adversities. Why do you think we're in this room? Why do you think the God of my understanding have bonded us all together like this? Because he knows. He knows without a shadow of a doubt that it's going to be all right. So when the storms come and the wind blows and the rain starts pouring, you just grab hold of your ship and just hold them. Then you start rocking from side to side. And then before you know it, the storm is passing over. Then you're going to wonder, how did I get to go? Oh, good God Almighty. And you'll be out of the storm. But you're going to have to go through something. And like I tell, like a lot of people come in, they want to be get everything so perfect. You haven't heard me say anything about the steps yet. Because if you listen to me, you can hear the steps incorporated in my life. I don't have to let you know how much I know about the basic text.
I don't have to let you know that I can tell you all about the first step. What I have learned how to do is incorporate them steps in my life, and I got to work them steps every day. Not just today. I've got to work them steps every day of my life. You don't forget. Or get down 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and I'm through. I don't have to pick this book up no more. It's a damn lie. Life is going on. Things are still happening. And you got to work each and every day. And if you don't have no faith, nothing's going to come to you. And like I always say, I don't fail in anything I do. Nothing do I fail in. You know why? Because I try. Even whether it comes out the way I want it or it don't come out the way I want it, at least I can say, Doreen, you did try. And I thank God for that. And I thank you people for that. Because it's only through the grace that I'm here. I take no credit for what I got. Because to me, God speaks through people. And I never know when I'm going to walk in this room and somebody's going to give me the message from God. That's how this thing works. When I had to make a decision to leave my husband, I went to a detox meeting that morning. And I'll never forget. It was a rainy, one of them drizzling, one of them good snoofer days. One of them days you could just lay back and just roll in it. And I went into this meeting. And I looked around, and for some reason, that meeting was crowded with women. But it was one particular woman that was in that meeting that caught my eye. And she was a little old lady. And this lady looked like she was about 80 years old. And she was crumbled up and she was... She had to shake so bad. And I kept looking at this woman. I kept looking at this woman. And I kept looking at this woman. And I kept saying to myself, what in the world could this woman have on her that's weighing her down so heavy that she's sitting up in detox this morning? And I kept looking at that woman, and after a while, that woman turned into Doreen. I wasn't looking at her anymore, because there by the grace of God, go on. Girl, if you don't get up and do what you got to do, you won't be that little old woman 5, 6, 10 years from now. I jumped up in the middle of the meeting, and I said, thank you! I run out that meeting, I run home, and I start pulling my clothes down out the closet, throwing them in my car, and everything. Mom said, what's going on with you? I said, I got to go. He said, you got to go? I said, I got to go. I'm not going to live like this no more, and I'm leaving. He said, you mean you're leaving me? I said, I got to go. He said, after all we've been through? I said, I got to go. And he looked at me. He said, well, go ahead on, you black nappy-head bitch. I said, well, black, yes, I am. Nappy-head. Darn tooth, I'm never here. I said, but now when you say holier than thou, I said, brother, you done put me on a pedestal. So evidently you done put me somewhere that I am trying to get. And I want to thank you, because I'm gone. And I left and left everything. Everything in the apartment. All material things. You know how sometimes we say, I ain't going because this belongs to me, and why should I leave my stuff? Everything I left. And I moved into a basement apartment. Nowhere near like my apartment was. And I got in that apartment and I prayed and I thank God for the roof he put over my head. I thank God for having a job. I thank God for the money that I had to pay and get this apartment. And I thank God for my salvation, even though I was hurt. And when I looked around that apartment, seen that little mouse in there, I said, oh, Lord, have mercy. I said, brother, you stay on your side of the room and I'm still mine and we'll be all right. He went on back in the hole somewhere. And to show you how things work, I stayed in an apartment 1 week and got a telephone in there. Steadily going to my meetings. Steadily being with my friends in the fellowship. As soon as I got my phone in, I made a phone call. And I don't know why, but I called my younger sister. And she said, Doreen, where have you been? We've been looking for you. So we heard that you have left Pines. So where are you? And I told her. She said, look, I just got a 2-bedroom apartment for my daughter about 6 months ago. Said the lease is going to run out and she decided to go back with her husband. I don't know what to do with the apartment and the furniture in there. You know, she said she's a month back. Said if I pay that month back, would you pay, take that apartment and you can have everything in there? I said, thank you! Brand new apartment with everything in it. And both bedrooms, the television, everything that I needed. All I had to do was take my clothes and go in there. Show you how things work. My car busted out on me. Went over to the lot and man talked me into getting a new car. Let me drive and everything. I said, yeah, I'll take it, you know. So he said, well, how much did you put down on it? I said, I ain't got nothing put down on it. He said, well, lady, you got to put something down on the car. I said, well, you say you're going to take that rack of mine? I said, well, what about the rebate? How about putting the rebate down? He said, lady, you can't do that. He said, you give me $100, you can leave out here with the car. I left out there with the car. I couldn't get tags because I had a loan where my car was set up for the loan, for us to get the loan. Not on his car, it was on my car. And the man said, lady, who's going to... I said, bitch, can I have the title to my car so I can get my tags, new car? He said, what about this loan, lady? I said, well, I've been paying you, you know, I don't owe, you know, I ain't backing my bill. And he said, but I got to have some kind of collateral. You know, he said, how in the hell did you sell that car anyway? And I got the title for it. I said, well, the man took it and he junked it, did whatever he going to do with it. He said, well, lady. I said, well, all right, then thank you. I just have to take this car back. And turned around and walked out the room. And the man said, miss, he said, didn't I see an article on you in the paper about a year ago? I said, yes, you did. He said, that was a beautiful article. He said, how are you doing? I said, I'm doing just fine. Turn around and look. He said, here, give me the title. I said, thank you. So you can't tell me that things don't work. All you got to do is believe and have the faith and follow on through. And it will be all right. I always say, God, don't move my mountains. But just give me the strength to continue to climb. Don't take away my stumbling blocks, but just lead me all around. And I only got that by coming into rooms like this and listening to people like you all and believing and stepping out there. It's all right to make a mistake as long as you don't make the same damn mistake. It's all right to be a fool as long as you ain't that same damn fool. And I'm going to say this and I'm going to sit down. You young ladies, you young men in here, begin to love one another and respect one another. You know? Like a lot of us, we come in here and as soon as we 2 weeks clean or a week clean or a month clean, boy, we get to feeling our Cheerios. And it's been so long since I've had somebody to tell me how good I look and how beautiful I am. That I'm ready to go for anything. And I'm here to tell you, give yourself a chance. I'm 53 years old, and I'm just learning what a wholesome relationship is. I'm just learning how to be with my husband, to sit down in the same room with him, and we hold conversations, and we can talk. I'm just beginning to learn how to have an argument, and we have our arguments, and I think that that's the end of the world. I'm just learning how to speak my mind about how I feel. And we sit and we listen, and he does the same thing without thinking our world is coming to an end. I'm just beginning to learn how to appreciate him without having to go to bed. I'm learning how to touch and how to feel and be with him. The companionship and the love. And the way things are happening around here today, we got to love each other and give each other a chance to start living. I don't know but down here, but in D.C., the young kids are having a hard time. We've got AIDS spreading out so bad in D.C., and kids are dying so fast out there that we have to be good to one another. We have to look out for one another. That we're starting an NA AIDS meeting up there. And if y'all want to see a powerful meeting, good God Almighty, that's a powerful meeting. See, things ain't like they was when I was out there. I swear to God, y'all young girls and everything, you look good and everything, but I do not want to be 20 no more. I don't want to go through that shit I done been through. No way in the world. But hang on in here and be good to yourself and be good to one another. And give yourself a chance. And when you begin to get a relationship, let me tell you, come out of the storybooks or the Father Knows Best or the movies and deal with life as it is, not the way it should be or the way you want it to be, but deal with it like it is. And know that you're two separate individuals and you've got to learn to know one another and to respect one another and know how to give space when it's time to give space to one another. See, a relationship is not easy. And when they tell you try not to get involved for a year, they mean that not that you don't have friends or nothing like this, but to get emotionally involved. Because when you get emotionally involved, it takes away from you. It takes away from you. I'm so busy into him and what he's doing and how to do this for him, how to do that. Well, what the hell about you? That's like when my husband come into the fellowship. I had to help to get a narrow non meeting started. I had to learn how to stay out of his program. I had to let that man know how to grow from the cradle on up. And I had to begin to look at him and know that this sucker was just as sick as I was. And two sickies together, what is you going to get? So I had to learn how to get back and allow him to grow in his own way. And it was not easy. And I thank God that I had 5 years under my belt when he came in here. Because I'd have been crazy to lose this. I'd have been back out there if I did not have under my belt what I did when he came in here. So therefore, I thank God for my sponsor. I thank God for this fellowship of teaching me and learning me what to do. He goes to his meetings and I go to my meetings. We do not go to meetings together. Only meetings we go together with is when we go to anniversaries or some affairs or something like this or so. But other than that, we got our own meetings that we go to. And I thank God for that. And like I said, I left from the Bureau of Rehabilitation working as a counselor. And I told you, I had no education, no skills. I did go back to school, get my GED. I missed it by one point. I'm going to go back and see if I can get it off at one point in math. And now I'm working as a federal probation officer. So I carry a badge in my pocketbook today. And all that reading and writing, I do have a secretary. So all I can say, if you only keep the faith, if you only believe, and I mean get down on your knees, and I mean talk. It's no special way to talk to God. Talk to Him. Tell Him what you need. Tell Him what you want. Tell Him. You heard me. I said, tell Him. If anybody knows the story of Job, God told Job, get on up from here and tell me what you want. Whining and pampering and crying and crying. Tell me what you want. When I read that, I said, oh, good God Almighty. Tell me what you want. Pray for it, ask for it, and keep on going like you got it. Like you got it. And when you look up, you say, oh, what is this? You can believe that it will be all right. And I always say, when you know that 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 you know, you better know an ass. And I do know that NA works today. Always like to leave y'all with nobody but you and A. Nobody but you, you, you. And make me happy. Oh, yes, you heal me too. When I was in trouble, you brought me through. Nobody but you and A. Nobody but you, nobody but you and A. Nobody but you, you, you can make me happy. Oh, yes, you heal me too. When I was in trouble, you brought me through. Nobody but you and A. Nobody but you who stopped my wounded heart from crying. Nobody but you and A. Nobody but you. No, no, nobody but you and A. Nobody but you, you, you can make me happy. Oh, yes, you heal me too. Oh, when I was in trouble, you brought me through. Nobody but you and A. Nobody but you. Nobody but you and A. Nobody but you, 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 you can make me happy. Oh, yes, you heal me too. When I was in trouble, you brought me through. Nobody but you and A. Nobody but you. Thank you.